good morning, sir. And what is your name, sir?
My name is Casey Benefield.
Okay, Mr. Benefield, just hold on a moment. Let me see if I'm going to conduct your hearing. The Honorable Mr. David Neal will serve as the lead for your hearing. Therefore, the next voice you will hear will be that of the Honorable Mr. Neal. So just hang on, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Can you hear me okay, sir?
Yes, Mr. Neal, I can hear you.
Okay. Can you still hear me okay, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Please state your full name and agency number for the record, sir.
Casey Pinard Benefield. My number is 110-238.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing for the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency this morning in reference to your community supervision revocation.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to introduce the board member that will conduct your hearing at this time. To my far right is the Honorable Michael Johnson. In the center is the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who is our board chairman. And my name is David Neal, and I'll be the hearing lead today.
Okay.
Also in the room, we have Mr. Turner from the Department of Corrections, and I'll also represent the parole office today. So prior to this hearing, sir, you received a notification form advising you of the hearing. Do you remember that form?
Yes.
Can I inform you you're notified of your right to appear and speak on your own behalf or obtain a licensed attorney at your own expense? Do you hire an attorney, sir, or are you representing yourself today?
I'm representing myself today.
Okay, I'm going to swear you and Mr. Turner in at this time. You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, or do you so affirm?
I do.
Okay, your hearing will be conducted in two phases, sir. In phase one, we'll determine if the terms and conditions of your community supervision have been violated. And then in phase two, we will determine whether your community supervision should be revoked or reinstated.
Okay.
Phase one, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the two allegations that are on your warrant. After I read each one, I'm going to ask if it's true, false, or if you wish to plead the fifth. And that is based on factors of like a police report number and a booking number listed on the warrant. So there may be some pending charges out there. Our hearings are recorded, and the recordings are public information, so they could take those tapes from our hearings and use them against you if you have some court proceedings pending, okay?
Okay.
All right, so allegation number one is a violation of Arizona Official Supervision Number 5, as demonstrated by your engagement in threatening behavior on or about June 29, 2018 in Maricopa County, Arizona. Is that true, false, or do you wish to plead the fifth?
That is false, sir.
Okay. We'll go ahead and do the other allegation, and we'll come back and address that. So allegation number two is a violation of Arizona Condition of Supervision Number 5 as demonstrated by your engagement in physically assaulting behavior on or about June 29, 2018 in Maricopa County, Arizona. Is that one true, false, or you wish to plead the fifth, sir?
That is equally false, sir.
Okay, well, we're going to go to Mr. Turner, and he is going to go over those allegations. Mr. Turner, I don't know what it looks like. It looks like count one and count two are pretty much the same.
Yes, that's what it looks like to me.
Okay, so if you would read allegation one.
Allegation number one. Information was provided by Phoenix Police Department Officer Windsor, number 6787. On 6/29/2018, at approximately 11:54 hours, Officer Windsor, number 6787, and Officer Epperson, number 5760, responded to an emergency call of domestic violence incident located at 2802 West Foothill Drive, number 41, Phoenix, Arizona, 85027. On arriving on scene, the victim was identified as Carrie, was standing outside with her neighbor. The victim, Carrie, was crying and upset and kept pointing to trigger number 41 and stated, "He was in there." Officer Epperson and Officer Windsor went to trigger number 41 and knocked on the door. A black male, later identified as Casey Benningfield, the offender, answered the door. The officers entered the residence to speak with offender Benefield Casey, ADC number 110238. He was questioned if he was involved in an argument with his wife, Carrie, in which Fender Benefield Casey, ADC number 110238, stated they were arguing, and then his wife left. Officer Espinoza left the trailer and spoke to the victim, Carrie, at the neighbor's house where she was at. Officer Everson observed the victim, Carrie, had visible injuries. Her upper lip was swollen and her lower lip had a cut and was bleeding. Carrie indicated the offender and her were in a verbal altercation and the offender got mad and struck her in the mouth. According to Carrie, the offender also said that he was going to kill her and had a weapon in the vehicle. Phoenix PD checked the vehicle and found a replica of a .45 caliber handgun in the glove compartment. Carrie was advised that the weapon was not a real gun, but a toy replica, but looked and appeared authentic at first glance. Officer Everson returned to trailer number 41 and advised offender Benefield Casey, ADC number 110238. He was under arrest for assault. The offender was transported to jail and booked on one count of assault.
Thank you, sir. Allegation number two was written identically. So
it is.
Yeah, I'm down people to the last line, so I'm not sure whether it was a second charge of like domestic violence or something to that effect, that they just didn't write it in. Because Okay, Mr. Benefield.
Yes, Mr. Neal.
What is false about that?
What is false about this is, number one, the misdemeanor assault charge, because I went to trial on it, was dismissed. The visible lip bleeding that my wife had was due to her biting me. I explained it to the officer. They took pictures of my hand. I was bit twice by my wife as I was trying to get my hand out of her mouth. That's how her lip was busted. I was treated at the county jail with...
Sir?
I'm a non-felon.
Sir? Okay.
Yes.
Phase two is where a huge explanation is appropriate. So, but basically you said you were having a physical tussle with your wife, even when she bit you and
I did not participate. What I said was false, but I didn't participate in assaultive behavior or any threatening.
Sir.
Yes, sir.
The thing is that we'll move on to phase two for a better explanation, okay?
Okay, yes, sir.
Okay, so based on information on 2018W1904 and information from the Department of Corrections and the information that they got from Phoenix Police Department, I'm going to move to find that Mr. Benefield was delinquent as a violated term of condition under supervision and that he may have lapsed or about to lapse in external ways or company.
Second.
Is there any? Motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Johnson, agreed by Dr. Wright. Okay, Mr. Benefield, we're going to move into phase two in a minute or two, but before we do that, Mr. Turner's going to give us some background information. So stay on the phone, and I'll get back with you in a couple of minutes, okay?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Turner.
All right, Mr. Benefield was released from ADC custody on 12-1-2017 and arrested on 6-29-2018 by Phoenix PD on misdemeanor charges of assault, intent, reckless injury. Returned back to ADC custody on 8-10-2018 with a CSED of 514-2020, zero abscondes. Current conviction, 2004 commitment F, count 1, armed robbery, 5 years. 2004 commitment F, count 1, burglary first degree, 15 years, 9 months. 2004 commitment F, count 2, disorderly conduct, 3 years, 9 months. 2004 commitment F, count 3, endangerment, 3 years, 9 months. Prior convictions, 1994, aggravated assault, 3 years and 6 months. 1999 commitment B, count 1, theft, 1 year, 6 months. 1999 commitment C, count 1, narcotic drug violation, 2 years, 6 months. 1998 commitment C, count 4, marijuana violation, 1 year. 1999, unlawful use means of transportation, 1 year. This is his third term in ADC, with a CUIR score of 3.3, mental health score of 3, substance abuse score of 2. No STG information is noted. 1998, TIS released, absconded for 80 days, arrested, revoked by DOEC. 2003, TIS release, completed 4 months. Disciplinary is significant and lengthy with sex acts, disorderly conduct, threatening with harm, possession of a weapon, aggravated assault, smuggling, contraband, rioting, and drugs noted. Other arrests, 1991, assault with a deadly weapon in Michigan, felony conviction, probation. 1991, concealed weapon, felony conviction, Michigan, probation. Has a GV score of G5, V6.
Thank you, sir. Okay, Mr. Gunther, we're going to move to a summary of the cases for ruling. If I can get the page. Okay, sir. So it looks like when we were released in December of 2017, and we had a approved placement of 2802 West Foothills, lot number 41 in Phoenix, Arizona. And that address was you and your wife living together there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And that's where you stayed until they arrested you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You're working with waste management?
Yes, sir.
Where?
I got that job 8 days out of prison. I've had that job until I got arrested.
Well, very good. It's very commendable that you get to work and stay at work. So for programming, you're wearing tasks for random color code of your analysis, and you were assigned the color mint. You were responsible for 9 relays while assigned to that color. You submitted 4 negative urine samples, and on April 20th, 2018, you submitted a urine sample which tested positive for THC or marijuana.
May I address that?
In a minute.
Okay.
May 15th, you failed to submit one, and then June 4th, you had a diluted sample. And then on June 21st, you failed to submit a urine sample. So let's see, that'll be the 21st. On the 25th, you submitted a urine sample which was tested positive for methamphetamines. And then on 6/28, June 28th, you were staffed and placed on increased random drug testing and assigned new task color code purple.
Correct.
But the next day or two that you got arrested, so I'm sure they didn't call your color. You were referred to a CHC for anger management classes, and you were removed from the CHC anger management classes due to beginning anger management classes at Terrell's on March 16th, 2018.
Correct.
And you didn't complete the classes.
No, I got arrested.
Okay.
Okay.
You went to the classes, you got arrested, so you didn't complete them. That's a simple statement. Okay, so I guess let's address your UAs first.
Okay.
So you wanted to tell me about the THC.
Okay, on 4/20/2018, it says I tested positive for marijuana. However, I got my medical marijuana card on March 16th. I was approved to smoke and use medical marijuana on the 23rd of March.
Okay, let me ask you a question, sir.
Sure.
So the 23rd of March, that's the day you went and talked to the doctor, they took your picture and sent off the paperwork to the state, correct?
No, that's the day I took my card in to see my parole officer, and my parole officer made a copy of it and put it in my file.
Okay, all right, that's cool. All right, so that explains the THC.
Yes, sir.
All right, but what explains the methamphetamine?
Now, on 6/4/2018, I was placed on a different drug called Tomalusin, which is almost like Flomax, along with the blood pressure medication, hydrochlorazide, which is also why I had the diluted UA, and I spoke to my PO about that and took in the names of the two new medications that I was on, prescribed by my doctor, Dr. Chow.
Okay.
Window. The Miss UA on the 21st, they had a system set up at the parole office where you got a text or a tweet from TASC when your color came up, and I was not aware that the system had been taken down until I went in on the 25th to see my parole officer. Once my parole officer told me that they had been changed, I went to TASC that day and took a drug test, and it came back positive for the methamphetamines. When I explained to my parole officer that that day at work I had hurt myself and I was smoking marijuana with someone else outside of the job, she then told me that I could not smoke marijuana outside of my home. We talked about that when we met with her supervisor, and they increased my random testing to twice a week. But I explained to her then that I don't and never have used methamphetamines. It was just in the water that was in the bong that I was using.
Okay. The day before the domestic violence, okay.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to see if my, let me back up a minute. Okay, so.
Okay.
When you were arrested.
Yes, sir.
Okay, you were having an argument with your wife, correct?
Correct.
And she got mad and bit you, correct?
Twice.
Okay, well, okay. Correct or incorrect? She got mad and she bit you.
Yes.
Okay. And when she bit you, you reacted to that, and that's how her lip got busted, right?
No, her lip got busted when her trying to bite me the second time.
Okay.
Coming towards me.
During the biting.
Yes.
Is when
I never hit her.
Well, how did her lip get swollen and bloody if you didn't hit her?
The blood from her lip was the blood from my hand.
Okay.
How when the police arrested me, they took pictures of my hand.
Okay.
They took
I'm not disputing that, sir.
Okay.
I'm asking you, how did her lip get swollen and bloody? You just explained the blood. Well, how do you explain the swollen?
Because she ran at me to bite me. I never hit her.
Okay. All right. Well, based on, you know, what the information that you've given us and the information I know about the domestic violence laws and everything else, I could see why they would arrest you and then charge you. The fact that charges were dismissed doesn't mean it didn't happen. It only means that the prosecutors and or the judge didn't want to deal with it, or they deemed it not quite as bad. But when they dismiss it, that only to us, all it tells me is that the charges were dismissed. It doesn't remove the fact that you were in a domestic violence situation with your wife. And based on the definition of domestic violence laws, just the fact you're arguing loud enough for anybody else to hear it is it can be considered disorderly conduct, domestic violence. So,
yes, sir.
Did your wife get arrested?
No, when they asked if I wanted to press charges, I told them no, because she had to pick our daughter off from school.
Okay. Actually, you're very, both of you were lucky both didn't go to jail at that time, because...
That's what the officer said. He said it was mutual combat. You both could go to jail today.
That's right. So, anyway, I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time. So, thank you. Okay, so we're nearing the end of your hearing. I'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement before we go into discussion to determine what we're going to do with the allegations and everything. But if you would try not to repeat the information we've already gone over, but if you have more information, any new information that you'd like to tell the board before we go into discussion, now's the time.
Yes, sir. First of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity to give me a chance to speak to you guys before you make a decision. I got out of prison after doing 13 years, and I got a job in 8 days. I worked that same job for 8 months. The only reason I don't have this job is because of this misdemeanor arrest. Currently, my wife and I have decided that we're going to get a divorce, and I have a new address to be approved. I have two new jobs that I can start immediately. one with construction and one with the Ace Power Washing, with the manager being named Erica. I wasn't just part of society, I was part of a good part of society. I worked every day. I had, I went to church. I was doing my anger management as well as all my classes with my tarot. I paid off all my child support. I was doing everything that I could to be a positive part of society. I'm embarrassed that this situation happened between me and my wife because the situation I could not avoid. I'm not a woman beater. I never hit her. I never struck her. And I explained that to the judge, who then ended up dismissing the charge. They called before you today with a new charge, and you said that you would not reinstate my probation and my parole. I have no arguments with that. But I'm asking that the dismissal weigh as much as a conviction would with your decision, because I really did not do this. I'm only asking for a chance to go home. I have a car payment. I have a daughter that's going to get ready to start college. I'm coming with college. I have a lot of responsibilities, and being in prison for 2 years behind this is not going to help me or my family situation one bit. I'm not asking you to go home. I'm begging you to give me a chance to go home and finish this parole and do the things I need to do and get back and help my family. Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Looks like your wife appeared here in the boardroom, and so I'm going to, if she would like to, I'm going to give her an opportunity to speak. Okay, she'd like to speak on your behalf, so she's going to come forward and she'll have an opportunity, sir, okay?
Okay.
So you're back.
Got a sweater. Sweater, wife.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Come on, George. Hi.
Okay, before you start, ma'am, would you, I need to swear you in.
Okay,
so you swear to tell the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, or do you so from?
I do.
Okay, thank you. Now, would you state your name, and then you tell us what you'd like?
Carrie Lynn Benefield.
Okay.
I actually wrote you a letter because I get nervous, and like right now I'm shaking. I have social anxiety. The bottom line is, anything that happened between my husband and I, it was really just his PTSD, and I didn't know what to do. The cop told me the only way that I could keep him from coming to the house, back to the house, was to get a restraining order. So I wasn't able to get a restraining order because of the court closing. I went through everything. I went through lines. I did everything I needed to do. Then when I got to the door, they said they weren't seeing anybody anymore for the day. It was a Friday. So I called the parole officer and told her I didn't know what to do. I left her a message. When I talked to her Saturday morning, she said she had put a hold on him. Now everything is kind of blowing up and it's this huge deal, and I just didn't know what to do. With his PTSD and counseling, everything was getting bad. We were arguing more, we were fighting more. And I just didn't know what to do. I was scared and everything got blown out of proportion. The truth of the matter is that I'm not gonna benefit from Casey going back to prison. Casey's not gonna benefit from him going back to prison. And the society that he's going to be released into eventually anyway is not going to benefit. Any work that he's done with his counselor to work on his PTSD and his anger management is just going to be unraveled. It's just going to get worse. Nothing's going to get better. He does have familial obligations. He has financial obligations, things that he can't do from inside a prison cell. And the truth of the matter is he needs counseling. He's not going to get that in prison. So I have a letter here which is more in depth, and I would like to submit it to you.
Oh, you can. We have a few questions that to ask you. Well, let's go back to the incident when he was arrested.
Okay.
So you guys were having an argument,
mm-hmm.
and you got mad and decided to bite him.
Kind of. I got mad and he grabbed my face. Just like that, but I think because I was already crying and yelling, he thought I was just being dramatic when I told him he was hurting me. And so he just kept talking, and so I bit him.
Okay. But you just said now you were talking about being afraid of him, but they wouldn't give you an order of protection for, you know.
It was time.
You made the statement that you're afraid of him. Are you afraid of him, man?
Not Casey. It's complicated. When he's going through stuff, like, we need to be separated. That's just what it is. We need to be separated. We both need to fix ourselves right now, and he needs to work on himself, and when he's going through those things and things are coming up and there's somebody in his space and in his bubble all the time, like, that's hard to kind of, you know, work through that. We had just had a really intense therapy session the day before, and he woke up, like, having a full-on nightmare, like, punching pillows, like, freaking out, crying in his sleep the same day.
Okay.
So I'm not afraid of him as a person. It's just that I didn't know what kind of frame of mind he was in right then. And that's another thing, too. I think that if he hadn't taken a debit card and I'd been able to put money on the phone and I would have known where his mind was at that point and, like, where he was, it probably, I wouldn't have been as afraid. But I just didn't know what was going on. Like, whether it's mental health or not, like, I just needed to kind of separate myself from the situation, and the cop was telling me that was the only way to do it.
Okay. Any other fellow board members have any questions? Mr. Johnson?
Are you aware, since this incident occurred, and that you're a victim, that even if he was released, he wouldn't be able to stay with you?
I know that now. I didn't know that then.
What caused the argument?
A basket of laundry.
My infidelity, Mr. Neal.
Sir, your wife is at the podium and has the floor.
I'm sorry, sir.
We've been fighting on and off about his infidelity, so everything's been kind of tense anyway.
Did you buy them?
I did.
So, the two of you were going to do counseling together?
Together,
and he was going
by himself as well.
Okay.
And I'm now going by myself as well.
All right, thank you.
Dr. Wright, thank you, sir.
Yes, ma'am. Just want to make sure I understand. How long have y'all been having these, whatever they were, arguments, disagreements, or whatever? How long has that been going on?
The last few months.
And it was just at this point that you were advised that you should get a protective order from the
police officer told me, yes.
And you didn't think of that before? I mean, if it's been going on over a month.
Well, no, because this isn't somebody that I'm, like I said, normally he's not somebody that I would fear. He's my husband. He's the man who protects me, not hurts me. So there's normally not a fear there. It was just this argument seemed to get so intense, and I think, like I said, it was because he had the nightmare and everything else that morning. Everything just kind of, it went from 0 to 100 out of nowhere. And I don't think that it was, I don't think it was malicious. I really think he's just, he needs help. He needs to finish his therapy. He needs his counseling.
But y'all had never had a physical altercation before this.
I mean, so before this day, my husband's never even called me out of my name. I've known him for 20 years, and if anybody probably decides that, you know, deserves that once in a while, it's me. He's never even done that. It's not his normal character.
Did you, and forgive me, but I just need to kind of understand. He stated that the reason, if I heard him correct, that this whole thing developed was because he had been having some type of affair. Were you aware of that before now, or this was something new for you?
I didn't.
Did you kind of push him, and did that kind of made him angry, the reason that he ended up, whatever it was, he said was not, fighting, whatever happened. What happened?
Verbally and body issues,
buttons, yeah. How long has he had this PhD you mentioned, ma'am?
He's had it for a while. It's been getting worse. The nightmares really started probably 2008 when he witnessed the murder on Sima. That's when he first started having trouble sleeping and started having nightmares.
So he witnessed a murder?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of murder? I mean, was it a family, a friend, or just coming out in the streets?
No, like another inmate was, his eyes were gouged out. And
while he was incarcerated.
And they left him there to bleed out until the guards noticed about 20 minutes later. And the black dudes couldn't move because the white guys had just killed him, so they had to just sit there like nothing happened until the guards noticed. you literally watched this guy bleed out to death. 2 feet away from him, 3 feet away from him.
Let me just ask one other question, then I won't take up any more time. And I apologize for asking this question. Why at this time you, whatever happened, and I was not there, and don't know what happened, but why would you come before this body, this board? And basically, if I'm interpreting what you're saying correctly, and if not, you can correct me. You're saying, let him go. Put him out. Why would you do that, ma'am, after y'all had that, whatever happened? Fight or whatever happened, and I know you say you're not frightened of him anymore, but if he did it then, if somebody pushed his button, you don't think he would do it again?
Well, that's the divorce. That's why there's a divorce. Is we've obviously just been hurting each other too much, and it's all toxic, and there's nothing left to say. So that's the divorce. The problem is that this man has been my friend for half of my life. I know him, and I know that this behavior is not him. And I know that if he gets the counseling that he needs, he will be the father that he needs to be to our daughter. And that's the most important thing. My daughter needs her father.
How old is your daughter?
She just turned 18.
He is the natural father.
I'm the stepmom.
You're a stepmom. Oh, he's a father. You're a stepmom. Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand. Thank you.
Sorry, but that's my baby.
Well, thank you for getting me on the right track. Okay. Now, thank you, ma'am. Thank you so very much, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Benefield, you started to make a comment. Did you have something new to add? You don't need to go over old information, just new stuff.
No, I wanted, because the question that the doctor asked, the doctor asked was what started the fight that day. It was I take total responsibility for my infidelity, and I had started by cheating on my wife, and we had an intense marriage counseling appointment the day before, and we already made a decision that we were going to get a divorce, but we've been together for so long, and with our daughter and our nieces, it was such a complex argument that took place. But I assure this board and my wife as well, I'm not some woman beater just trying to trick you to let me out. That's not what I am. I made a mistake. I readily admit that. I cheated on my wife. I broke a vow. I did something I shouldn't have done. But I am far from a woman beater. And if rehabilitation has shown me anything, I can make it in society. I'm not some drug addict who was unemployed, who wasn't helping his family. I've been working not just a job. I got out and got a career. I was doing the right thing. And I'm begging you for an opportunity to go home. We got two car payments and a mortgage that I'm still responsible for. I'm just asking for a chance to go home and write this shit, please.
Okay, sir. We thank you for your statement, and we're going to be going into the discussion. We'll be talking amongst ourselves. If you may think that we're addressing you, but we won't be. We ask you to remain silent, stay on the phone, and I'll get back with you once we've made a decision. Okay, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. The board is now in discussion. Well, Mr. Benefield is an interesting man. It sounds like in a lot of ways he was being very successful, but it really, really, really troubles me to have a domestic violence situation within about 6 months of 7 months of being released. When we look at his history of armed robbery, disorderly conduct, endangerment, aggravated assault, some drug charges, and assault with a deadly weapon, concealed weapon violation. I really, truly am very uncomfortable with returning Mr. Benefield to community supervision this time, because if this problem erupted all of a sudden, going through divorce and everything else is going to be very, very, very stressful. And I just am not sure that even with counseling, because intense marriage counseling was the day before, and he got upset. And they ended up with a domestic violence arrest out of it. So I'm not comfortable with returning him to CUNY supervision at this time, but I'm willing to listen to any discussion from my fellow board members. Mr. Johnson.
I think Mr. Anthony was going through some cards to his wife they both were in a situation that they both could have went to jail and almost a mutual combat type situation with him, but I am, you know, understanding that he was at least getting some type of counseling and going through some counseling for the PTSD and the marriage counseling that he was going through in his infidelity. But I think that Mr. Benfield probably needs to continue his counseling to work through his issues. His wife says she's known him for 20 years, and the entire time that they've been together, they've never had this type of physical altercation. And she says that she probably was pushing the right buttons, doing a verbal argument that kind of led up to some of this. So I think that Mr. Benfield is probably benefiting and could continue the counseling. I do have just one thing that does bother me about it, is that he had the simulated weapon in his vehicle. You know, that I don't know what he would have been doing with a simulated weapon in his vehicle. That kind of bothers me there, although it was not a real one, but that does bother me.
Dr. Wright?
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I find Mr. Benfield has been a very interesting gentleman, young man. He speaks in an intelligent way. I am concerned about pushing that button, and I don't know whether that was just what was going on. That's what I can't figure out. If something must have been going on. It's never happened before, but all of a sudden, pushed the button. And we all have buttons pushed in our lives. That's just human. That's human nature. I think that one of the things that I cannot overlook for this purpose, Honorable Mr. Neal, and this is just me and one board member, to be sure we're mainly talking about this incident. But he also, I know he had an explanation for it, and I can buy the explanation, and he may be correct with his explanation. He also used something, methamphetamine, some water in a cup, or some medicine that got all mixed up and turned to be meth, and being on community supervision, that is definitely a no-no, sir. To be sure he had his... There's no one card, but there is no card for methamphetamine. And that concerns me very much, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright.
And on that point, it's like using somebody else's needle or picking up somebody else's silverware at a restaurant and using it to, after they've put it in their mouth. There's a certain individual responsibility to make sure what you're doing before you do it. And I personally can't understand having a condom bomb or anything else like that, or sharing a pipe when you're on a bank card, because, you know, maybe if they have a card that's legal, but if they don't have a card, that's illegal too. And anyway, I'm not convinced about the story on the meth either. So, okay, well, at this point, based on all the information in warrant number 2018W1904, information from the Department of Corrections, and Mr. Benfield's statement, and the information that his wife had given us. I'm going to move to revoke the community supervision of Mr. Benefield as he was delinquent, violated term condition of supervision, and had lapsed or was about to lapse into criminal ways or company, and very specifically being involved in a domestic violence situation and use of methamphetamine. And that is my motion.
Second for Greg.
Motion by myself, seconded by Dr. Wright, agreed by Mr. Johnson. Sir, the board has voted unanimously to revoke your community supervision at this time. According to the information we have, you're scheduled to be released on May 14th, 2020, and we hope that you will take advantage of any available programming in there and try to get some mental health treatment while you're in there.
No, you don't care about any of that because you just made it plain that you don't want me to have any help or treatment. You just decided.
I didn't give you an opportunity to respond. You're stepping over what I'm saying.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, the discussion is over. We've voted to revoke your community supervision.
So, oh, no, I heard that part.
Okay, well, your hearing is over, sir. And would you put the CO3 back on the phone?
No.